Appreciate your presence midweek as we you are used to gathering on Wednesday evening for Bible study, and then when we have a meeting like this, and it's always encouraging to meet together in this format. Although, like most churches around the country, folks haven't had meetings for a while, so I'm glad to see that things are getting back to normal to somewhat, and so I just want to say how much I've appreciated the opportunity to be with you all here this week and to reunite with people that I know and love from past times and to meet new ones, and it's just a thrill for me. Zach can say all he wants about my encouragement to you, but I will tell you that it's a two-way street. There's some congregations you go to that you walk away and feel as if they encouraged you maybe more than you encouraged them, and I always feel that way when I'm with all of you. What a group of kind people, God-loving, salt and light kind of folks, and I just always enjoy my time with you so very, very much. And I sure enjoy being with the Redmonds again and getting to visit with them some. Zach came over today, and we got to visit some this morning for a little while, and I just wish he had more of a personality. He's just not very friendly. But I can tell he loves you all, and it's vice versa, and I am just so excited about the work here. And in spite of last year and even this year, I trust and pray that you will continue to make progress and continue to get back to the way things should be and continue to start growing once again. I also want to take a moment of your time and thank you for, after I was here in 2018, in 2019, Julie and I made our third trip to the country Bulgaria, and you all helped support me in that. And I want to say how much I appreciate your interest in preaching the gospel, not only here locally, but in other places, and even around the world. We were able to spend a week back in country, and we love those brethren there. Sofia is the capital of Bulgaria. If you don't know where Bulgaria is, it is on the Black Sea, and on the other side of the Black Sea is Russia. And Bulgaria used to be behind the Iron Curtain. And I grew up hearing prayers prayed, and I'm thinking you probably did too, years ago during the Cold War, of Lord, tear down the Iron Curtain and let the gospel go to places it's not been before. And there's churches now meeting all across that region of Eastern Europe where before they had to meet in secret. And what a joy it is to worship with brethren over there. The church there has about 40 people, and they are from just all over that region. And some are Russians. Some have fled persecution, Muslim persecution out of Turkey. But those people are there, and they're committed. It's not easy to be a Christian in that part of the world, and those people are really committed, and it was a joy to be with them again, to preach for them, to have studies that week, and I'll tell you a little secret about Bulgaria that a lot of people don't know. In Bible times, that was Macedonia. So when you sing the song about the Macedonian call, just please understand you had a part in helping send someone to Macedonia. And so you might think about that, because those folks over there are very, very special to us. And we had a lot of opportunities and open doors that God has given to us. Obviously, we didn't get to go last year or this year, but we do want to go back. And hopefully you may be interested in that work again. As I was leaving the building one service over there, this older Russian man came up to me, and he just hugged me and spoke in a language that I don't understand, and so I had my interpreter, and I turned to him and I said, "What did he say?" And he sort of laughed, and he said, "I pray that you will live 150 years." I said, "Well, I've never had anybody pray that before." Oh my. So thank you all for not only encouraging me here, but encouraging me in other places as well. I commend you for that. Thank you. Turn in your Bibles to 2 Corinthians 5. Have y'all ever studied 2 Corinthians? Thought I'd just throw that out there. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7 is a verse that we know by heart. It's a verse that's easy to say. It's a verse that's easy to preach, but it's not so easy to live. 2 Corinthians 5, 7. For we walk by faith and not by sight. What does that mean? We quote that verse when somebody's going through a hard time and we'll say, well, we just got to walk by faith and not by sight. What does that mean? Well, let's talk about that. But for a moment, I want you to just hold that thought. For we walk by faith and not by sight. We'll come back to it in just a moment. As you go through the Bible presents a series of unforgettable walks. You don't have to get very far in the book of Genesis, and there it says God walked into the garden and called out the name of Adam and Eve. Or you can read about the hard walk of Abraham with his son Isaac in tow. And every step taken by the old man was excruciatingly painful because he knew what God had asked him to do. And there was the walk of Moses and the Israelites through what had been the Red Sea. Or how about the walk of Joshua and the Israelites around the walls of Jericho? Or you come to the New Testament. There's two disciples walking along the road to Emmaus. And a stranger joined them who seemed oblivious to the events of the day. And they were talking to him. And eventually as he left them, it was revealed to them that it was actually Jesus. And they said, were not our hearts burning within us as he walked with us on the road? What about Saul's interrupted walk to Damascus? It was a walk that he would remember for the rest of his life. Or the Savior's walk from the Praetorium to Golgotha, a walk that would change your life and mine. And how many times is the Christian life compared to a walk? Ephesians 4, 1, 1 Thessalonians 2, and verse 12. Walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called. Walk. But one of the most unforgettable walks was taken by Simon Peter. The night that Peter decided to get out of the boat and go walk on the water. It was unforgettable because of what he was walking on, and unforgettable because of who he was walking with. But Peter's decision to get out of the boat and walk on the water is an invitation for all of us to do the same. An invitation for all of us to step out in faith. An invitation to do what only you can do with the help of God. You can't do it on your own. For we walk by faith and not by sight. There's times individuals need to step out of their comfort zone and take God by the hand and go for a walk. There's times churches need to get out of their comfort zone and take God by the hand and go for a walk. Does it involve risk? Yeah, it does. Does it involve an element of fear? Yes, it does. Does it involve faith? Every single time. But one thing is for sure, ladies and gentlemen. If you're ever going to walk on the water, the first thing you have to do is make the decision to get out of the boat. My Bible is open to Matthew, the 14th chapter, beginning in verse 22. Matthew chapter 14, beginning in verse 22. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, "It is a ghost."
And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's Son." They were only crossing the Sea of Galilee. Jesus, wanting to be alone and to spend some time in prayer, sent them on ahead, which was no problem. It was no problem for the likes of Peter and Andrew and James and John. They were fishermen by vocation. Where did they fish? They fished the Sea of Galilee, so they knew every square inch of that body of water. That was no problem for the rest of them either, because all of the other 12 were from Galilee, and they crossed the Sea of Galilee many times. But tonight would be different. Tonight there would be a storm. And it wasn't a minor squall. Verse 24 says, they were battered by the waves. I have a marginal reading that says literally, they were tormented by the waves. It was a storm. In John's account, in John chapter 6, John said they'd been rowing 3 or 4 miles against a strong wind. And by this point in time, it's getting very late, somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. And the disciples, after as exhausted as they must have been at this point in time, the disciples weren't just worried now about getting to the other side. I think they were probably worried about staying alive. And that's when they saw the shadowy figure of a man move in their direction. Like us, they thought they were seeing a ghost. Verse 26. In fact, the Bible says they were terrified. You know, I read somebody that criticized them for that. They criticized the 12. They said, how could they not know this was Jesus? Who else would it have been? And I got to thinking about that. Don't we do the same thing? How often are you and I, how often do we find ourselves surrounded in a fearful situation, battered by winds of turmoil and tension and trouble and trial, and we don't recognize the nearness of God with us any more than today? So maybe we should not be so quick to criticize them when we do the same thing. But here's the question: what is Jesus doing? And why is Jesus doing it? And what is his motive? I want you to hold your finger here in Matthew 14, and I want you to go to Mark chapter 6. Mark makes a statement Matthew doesn't. Mark adds an element that just sort of leaves you with a, what? Mark 6 and verse 48. Same scene. Mark 6, 48. Seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them, at about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. Now here's what I want you to mark. And he intended to pass them by. What's that all about? He intended to pass them by? Why? There are certain defining moments in Scripture where God presents himself to man in such a striking way to communicate an unforgettable message. On one occasion in the Old Testament, God put Moses in the cleft of the rock to watch, quote, "while my glory passes by." On another occasion, he has Elijah stand on the mountain For the Lord, it says, is passing by. Here comes Jesus walking on the water, intending to pass them by. Pattern? Well, it would seem. But in each of those situations, and in a dozen more, it was very critical that God get their attention. And so, when God appeared in a burning bush, or when God appeared through the quaking of Mount Sinai, or when God fed 5,000 people, or when God comes walking on the water, it is God doing something at that moment in time that man cannot do. It is a revelation of the divine presence and power of God. This is something only God can do. And so before Jesus takes them any further in this ministry, it is absolutely essential that he get their attention in a way that they would never forget. And I think he succeeded. I think he got their attention. 12 disciples in a boat, filled with confusion and wonder and disbelief and fear, paralyzing fear. And then one of them got an idea. Simon Peter decided to go for a walk. So here's what I want to do. I want to take 2 Corinthians 5:7, we walk by faith and not by sight, and I want to merge it with Matthew 14 and this scene of Jesus walking on the water and Peter making the decision to get out of the boat. And so, because I think Matthew 14 helps us to understand what it really means to walk by faith, and to help us understand what that first passage really describes. And so I'm going to give you 4 points tonight. 4 things, not 10, 4. What does it mean to walk by faith that we learn from this passage in Matthew chapter 14? What does it mean to walk by faith? And I think these 4 points will help any church face whatever challenges, whatever opportunities lie in the future. 4 facts about walking by faith. All right, write this down. Number one, if you're going to walk by faith, and we've already made this point, we'll make it again. If you're going to walk by faith, the first thing you have to do is get out of the boat. You have to make a decision to get out of the boat. Now let me explain. You ever seen this Leonardo da Vinci painting, The Last Supper? You've seen that. It's all over the place. And da Vinci was a master artist. He was a great artist. But every time I see his portrait of The Last Supper, I have to smile. Because it is so wrong. First of all, da Vinci has got everybody at The Last Supper seated Western style. They're all seated like we're seated. And they didn't sit that way back then. They reclined most often to eat. And the second thing that is in that painting is he's got them all seated on the same side of the table. Did you ever notice that? Kind of odd. I have a friend of mine. He's one of these guys. And every church has them. Every church has a guy who always has a joke. And this brother calls me up one day and he says, "Do you know the last thing said at the Last Supper?" I said, "I have no idea, Jim." He said, "The last thing Jesus said at the Last Supper was, 'Fellas, if you want to get in the painting, get on this side of the table.'" I said, "That's pretty good." And if you look at the Da Vinci painting, he's all got them seated on the same side of the table. But artists have also done the same thing with Jesus walking on the water. You've seen renditions, paintings, of Jesus in this long flowing gown, and the moon is full, and the sea is glassy smooth, and here comes Jesus lightly tiptoeing along, walking on the water. I think there was a storm. And in fact, this text says the storm was so big, it was terrifying the 12. And you can only imagine the size of the waves and the strength of that wind and the darkness of the middle of the night. and you put yourself in Peter's place. The Lord is passing by and issuing you an invitation to step out in faith. What are you going to do? You have a choice. You can step out onto the water, or you can stay in the boat. And the boat represents what's safe. The boat represents what's secure and comfortable. The water, on the other hand, represents all of the opposite of that. The water is rough. The waves are high. The wind is strong. If I get out of the boat, I might not make it. If I get out of the boat, I might fail. If I get out of the boat, I might drown. But on the other hand, if I don't get out of the boat, there's a guaranteed certainty of 100% that I'll never walk on the water. So what are you talking about? What's the point of all of this? Well, here it is. All of us have a boat. Every one of us has a boat. Your boat is whatever represents safety to you. Your boat is what represents security for you. You ever see a little kid dragging a security blanket? You think little kids are the only ones who have security blankets? We adults have them too. It's where you put your trust. Jesus talked about that in Matthew chapter 6. He said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart is." Or where your treasure is, we might say, there is your trust. That's your security. And so with some people, money is their security. With other people, it is a job. It is a vocation. We talk about job security. With others, it may be family relationships. With others, it may be the success of life, whatever. There's all kinds of things that become security for us, that become our comfort zone. But each of us has something. We each have a boat. And it represents what's safe for us. Sometimes churches have boats, by the way. Sometimes churches will have a boat. Sometimes churches, a physical building will be their boat. That's really what they're all about, is their physical building. With others, it may be tradition. That becomes their boat. This is the way we've always done it. We ain't ever going to change. That becomes their boat. Now, COVID certainly did a number on that, didn't it? What we learned was there's different ways to do different things, scripturally, biblically. That may not be a bad thing. Kind of got us out of that boat. With some churches, saving money is more important than saving souls, and so that becomes our boat. But here's what I've noticed about everybody's boat. We all like to stay in it, and we don't want anybody coming and rocking it. What if the Lord rocks the boat? What if the Lord rocks our boat? All the while standing nearby, inviting us to get out of the boat, get out of your comfort zone, and walk over here to where I am. So when we talk about walk by faith and not by sight, the beginning place of all of that is we have to make a decision that at times we have to do that. At times we have to get out of the boat. We have to get out of our comfort zone. Secondly, if we're going to walk by faith, the storm may not go away. If we walk by faith, the storm may not go away. Challenges may not just disappear because I'm walking by faith. Sometimes I think people have the idea that says, "Lord, I know this is a very difficult thing that's in my path, but look at my faith. I'm having really great faith here. So now, make it go away." And the Lord may say, "Peace, be still," and it goes away, but the Lord may not. He may let the storm rage for a while. Did you notice when Peter made the decision to get out of the boat, the storm didn't go away just because he had faith? It's so interesting to me, and I try to put myself right in that scene. I try to put myself right there to kind of watch and see what's happening. And in my mind's eye, I see Simon and I see Simon go over to the edge of that boat, and I look around and I see 22 eyes watching his every move, because those other men have all seen him shoot off his mouth one too many times, and they're wondering, okay, now what's he going to do with this one? And in my eye, at my mind's eye, I see Peter getting over to the edge, and I see him putting one foot over. And he's grabbing onto the edge. And I see him putting the other foot over, and he's holding onto the edge of that boat, and his knuckles are as wide as they can be. And then in my mind's eye, I see Peter suddenly let go. You talk about doing something off the charts religious. He lets go. And he places his entire life into the hands of Jesus. He abandons himself to the power and the presence of Jesus. And for a moment, Peter is beaming and Jesus is smiling. And then it happens. Look in verse 30. But seeing the wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out and said, "Lord, save me." I wrote down reality check. Reality check. All of a sudden, Peter realizes what he's just done. He's in the midst of the storm. It's in the middle of the night. And the boat's now out of reach. And in Peter's mind, he's thinking, maybe this wasn't such a great idea after all. And fear sets in. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it's easier to walk by sight than it is to walk by faith. There's a guy by the name of Larry Lauden in a book on risk management. He says, we live in a society that is so fear-driven that we suffer risk lock. It's like gridlock in that we become so afraid we are unable to take the necessary steps that would energize our lives. We become afraid. Do you understand everything is risky? You do know that, right? Everything is risky. I read the other day that on the average year in America, 25,000 people are treated in emergency rooms across this nation for injuries occurred when they fell out of the bed. Teenagers love that. Because, see, I should have stayed. You just let me sleep in. Everything is risky. I had my little granddaughter with me a few years ago, and I was in a meeting in Lexington, Kentucky, and she loves horses, and so that's the perfect place to be. And so we went over to Kentucky Horse Park one day, and we saw all the horses, and then she wanted to go on a trail ride. And so I said, absolutely, we'll do that. And so we went and registered and got ready and went back at the appointed time. And they had about 4 pages that I was supposed to read and then sign, one of those liability things, 4 pages to tell me how dangerous and stupid, I shouldn't say stupid, dumb this was to ride horses, because horses can kill you. And all of the things that could possibly go wrong. And so I'm looking through all of this, and I signed it. Okay. So they divided the group into 2 groups, those who did not have experience riding and those who did have experience riding. And we had horses at the time, and so, you know, I'm in the experienced group, and so everybody's getting matched up to horses, and even in my group, everybody's getting matched up to horses. And finally, there's one person standing there alone who doesn't have a horse. That's me. And they looked at me and they said, you're good with horses. I said, yeah, I'm good with horses. They said, you're not afraid of them. I said, no, I'm not afraid of them. They said, well, good, because we've got a special horse for you. And that sounded weird. They said, he's the most gentle horse we have, but because of his size, people are afraid of him. And about that time, they bring out of the barn the biggest horse I believe I have ever seen. He was a Belgian. What are you laughing for? Think Clydesdale. They bring this horse out, and I'm standing there, and I'm 6'4", and I'm looking up at this horse. They have to bring a ladder. I've got to go up 3 rungs on the ladder to be able to swing over on that thing. They said, now listen, he's very, very gentle. He won't probably follow the other horses because he kind of likes to do his own thing and he'll go beside them. And it said, but he loves trail rides, but he doesn't get to go very often because everybody's afraid of him. And I said, it'll be fine. Well, it wasn't. After about 10 minutes, I realized why people don't ride these things. No, normally you ride a horse, you got one leg going down, you got the other leg going down. When you ride a Belgian, you got one leg going that way, and you got one leg going that way. Because their girth is huge. I mean, it is huge. And after about 15 minutes, I thought, man, hurry up, get this thing over with. I'm dying. You know? And there wasn't one thing on those four pages of paper, wasn't one thing about the danger of riding a Belgian that could possibly cripple you for the rest of your life, you know? My point is, everything in life is risky. If you step up to the plate, you could argue, well, I might strike out. Well, that's true. A lot of people do. But if you don't step up to the plate, you'll never know what it's like to hit a home run either. And if you don't get out of the boat, you'll never know what it's like to actually walk by faith. Write this down. Number three, if we walk by faith, we have to accept life challenges as the price we pay to grow. I'll say it again. If we walk by faith, we have to accept life challenges as the price we pay to grow. Now, if you look in verse 30, when Peter got out on the water, it says he became afraid. So my question is, did Peter fail? Did Peter fail? Well, we can go down the list. Did his faith waver? Yeah. Did he take his eyes off the Lord? Yeah, he did. Did he sink into the water? Yeah, he did. Did he cry out and say, Lord, save me? Yes, he did. He did all of those things. And so it's easy to look at Peter in this text and make the list and come to the conclusion that Peter failed. That the story of failure is Peter. But I don't think it is. The story of failure in the passage, ladies and gentlemen, isn't Peter. It's those 11 guys sitting in the boat. Peter's the only one who got out of the boat. Those guys sitting in the boat, they failed privately and quietly. Nobody's preaching sermons about those guys. The only one who bears the brunt of public scrutiny, the only one we talk about who's a failure, was the only one who happened to get out of the boat. And because Peter was willing to get out of the boat, he was the only one of the 12 who knew what it was like to actually walk on the water, to do something that man can't do. And he was the only one who knew the joy of, in despair, reaching out a hand and finding his hand grasped by the Lord Jesus Christ and pulled to safety. The others never knew that. They never had that experience. Because he got out of the boat, he shared a moment, he shared a connection with Jesus that they never did. Why? They're too afraid to get out of the boat. And the worst failure of our lives is not the failure of sinking, because we walk by faith. The worst failure of our lives is wrapping ourselves up in our little comfort zones because we're afraid to get out of the boat. I tell you, you will never grow spiritually till you get out of the boat. Dads, you want to lead your family as a God man of steel and velvet and be the kind of home leader that you need to be, you have to set the example and you have to show your family what it means to walk by faith. Mom, same for you. You want to teach and train your children? You want your children to grow up and remember you as the matriarch of faith? Then you have to be the Deuteronomy 6 parent. And you have to teach your children when they sit down in your house, when they go for a walk down the way, when they lie down, when they rise up. Every moment there are teaching opportunities for your kids. And you have to set the example. Elders, it's the same for you. You want to do the greatest work in the world and in the kingdom and for God's people, then you have to be out front, not behind. You have to be out front challenging us and motivating us and encouraging us and casting a vision for us. Deacons, it's the same for you. You never make an impact until you take your work seriously Bible class teachers, it's the same for you. Worship leaders, I don't care if you're leading a prayer, leading at the Lord's table, leading singing, whatever it is, you take your work seriously and you do the best job you possibly can do. You know, it's easy to walk the status quo. It's easy to get in the rut. Sometimes it's not so easy to walk by faith. So here's what we've said. If you're going to walk by faith, you've got to get out of the boat. If you're going to walk by faith, you have to expect challenges. They're not just going to go away because you have faith. If you're going to walk by faith, you have to accept those challenges as the price you pay to grow. And last, if you're going to walk by faith, that's when you connect with the living Lord. Only when you walk by faith do you connect with the living Lord. There's a lot of reasons to get out of your boat. But the number one reason is, over there on the water is where Jesus is, and he says, come to me. The problem is we try to comfort code everything. We try to live these manageable lives with security and predictability, and we insure everything because we want to pretend that we live in this illusion that I've got everything under control. You don't have anything under control. God may come along and shake up your world and rock your boat. Or he may let Satan do it. Remember what Jesus said to the same Simon? Satan has asked permission to sift you like wheat. What are you going to do then? All the while, Jesus hasn't gone anywhere. Jesus is nearby, and he says to you, it's okay, get out of your comfort zone and come over here to where I am. Come unto me, all who are weak and weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. You know, we make all kinds of excuses why we need to stay in our comfort zone. And there's so many points of application. You know, it may be the point of application of inviting others to worship God with you. What was it Philip said to Nathanael? Just come and see. Just come and see. Every other license plate I see these days at home is from California. Going down the road is just California, California, California. All these people are moving from California. And my next door neighbor's moved in from California, from Sacramento. He retired and got tired of paying all those taxes, and so he moves to Tennessee. And I'm sitting in my office one day at home, and it's in January. And I hear somebody on a tractor mowing their yard. We don't mow yards in January. And I thought, that's odd. And so I go outside, and there's Jim on a lawn tractor mowing his yard. There wasn't anything to mow. The grass is all brown. He's out there mowing his yard. So I go over there, and he stopped his tractor and said, I know, crazy California. He said, but I just got this lawnmower. And he said, I've never mowed grass before. He said, I can't wait for spring. But now, you know, he's lived there 2 or 3 years. Now I notice his grass is higher than anybody's. I think he's got tired of mowing his yard. But we invited Jim and his wife to come to church with us, and they've come twice and seem to, you never know. And we can come up with all kinds of excuses. Well, if I invite somebody, they won't come. Or if I invite somebody, they'll just reject my invitation. Or maybe they'll reject me. Well, how do you know? How do you know? If you don't get out of the boat. Or hospitality. We come up with all these excuses for hospitality. Well, I'm busy. I've got a small house. I work outside the home. When the kids are grown and gone, when my husband retires, maybe when we get a nicer place. Hospitality has nothing to do with any of that. Hospitality is simply taking what you have and sharing it with someone else. You know, we have spent the last 20 years defining what hospitality isn't. And I don't know how many lessons I've heard with a disclaimer. Hospitality is not just having people in your home. Okay, got it. Check that off. Understand that. But isn't that part of it too? When was the last time you had some folks from the congregation here into your home? Now, I understand COVID. I get all of that. Last year, this year was crazy. I get all of that. But as we return to more normal times, the principle and the teaching of hospitality, it's still there. Maybe that's the boat you need to get out of. Or maybe it's teaching a Bible class. Maybe it's teaching one of these kids' classes. Maybe it's participating in the service. Maybe it's going to see somebody who is sick. Maybe it's going to see, maybe it's going to the funeral home. I heard a guy tell me the other day, I don't go to funerals because I don't know what to say. It's awkward, I don't know what to say. And I said, get in line. And I literally, get in line. I don't know what to say either. But what I've learned about funerals is nobody's going to remember what you say anyway. But they're going to remember if you showed up. I'll guarantee you they'll remember that. So show up. Get out of that boat. Maybe it's helping others through hardship. Maybe you've gone through something and you come across somebody else who's going through a very similar time. Maybe you're the one, providentially, who can help them. If you're willing to get out of the boat and do it. We read that verse in 2 Corinthians, we walk by faith and not by sight. And it just rolls off our tongue so easy. Well, it's not always easy. And what we learn in Matthew 14 is there's some real-time application for all of us. Because we all have our comfort zone. We all have our security. And sometimes we need to let go of that and get out of our boat and go for a walk. Because, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to walk on the water, the first thing you have to do is get out of the boat. We sing the song of invitation tonight. If you're not a child of God, why don't you give your life to Him? Oh, why not tonight? There's no better time to become a Christian and be baptized. Or if there's some way we can sit down and study with you about your life